The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Anne Scott James, Phyllis Powell, Dennis Norden, and Frank Muir. Round one tries to test their vocabularies. Two marks, if you can give me the meaning of these words. Beginning with Dillis Powell. Dillis, the meaning of the word saturnine, S-A-T-U-R-N-I-N-E, saturnine.
Well, it means kind of under the influence of Saturn, which is a planet.
Yes.
And it implies a kind of sardonic, rather, a bit like Frank.
Not the least like Frank.
No? A bit like Dennis, then.
I'm well. Tuesday's child.
Rather kind of
Saturday.
A sardonic, darkish, not very jolly.
She got everything except my middle name.
You know, I always used to think that, Dillis, but it isn't quite right. You've left out one very important adjective in this one. In fact, it means gloomy or sluggish. Either in temperament or in appearance, which is very unfair on either Frank
not
or
like
Dennis.
Frank,
thank you.
But it was originally meant for people who were born under the planet Saturn. And now, Dennis Norden, the meaning of the word campanulate, C-A-M-P-A-N-U-L-A-T-E, campanulate.
Campanulate, like campanology, that's...
Yes?
It's got something to do with bells.
Yes.
So campanulate means to drop a clangor. behave like a bell, no?
Not to behave like a bell.
Not to behave... To look like a bell.
Yes, that's better. And what's it normally applied to?
Women. It's not normally applied to anything in
flowers,
the extreme
flowers.
Cases.
Yes,
really.
That's it. Your partner is helping you.
Oh, I see. It's one of these nature things.
All right, two marks it is. Bell-shaped... And usually applies to flowers. It could apply to the animal kingdom, I agree. Anne Scott James, what is a verst? V-E-R-S-T.
V-E-R-S-T, verst. Oh, I think this is a Russian mile, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a measure of length in Russia.
Fair enough.
They were always going in their stagecoaches, 555 versts.
Mm. That's absolutely
from
right.
From Moscow to somewhere.
And from
to Omskopomsk.
And you dropped your wife off the back of the sledge for the wolves.
Exactly.
That's right. It is, in fact, just over 2/3 of a mile, but that's near enough. It's a Russian measure of length. 3,500 feet. Two marks.
So a liverwurst is a very long sausage.
But surely not 3,500 feet. All right, your turn now, Frank. Anyway, Frank Muir, what is the meaning of the word uxorious? U-X-O-R-I-O-U-S, uxorious.
Uxorious. It's an old word, Jack.
Yes.
From the classic tongues.
Yes.
It's Latin.
Yes.
Yes?
Quite right.
It's Latin from uxor, an old boiling fowl. And rius, to bite with a beak, means henpecked.
Well, it isn't quite right. You're sort of, generally, so you're in the right league, I should have said.
Oh, I always thought it meant henpecked.
She loves me. He loves her.
Yeah. Well, it's being under the influence of your wife. I thought he meant henpecked. Oh, I'm sorry.
Loves her.
He's very, very devoted to his wife.
Yes, fair enough.
Uxorious chap.
Yes, too. It means excessively fond of your wife. Well, before we start round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and I want the two women members of the team to study their quotations, and then at the end of the program, I shall ask them where those quotations come from. So, beginning with Dillis Powell and Frank Muir, here's your quotation. I do like to be beside the seaside... And Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden, here's yours. Hail to the blithe spirit. And then at the end of the program, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their ideas of how these words came to be said or written. And so to round two, These are all shows that have achieved success, either as plays or as films, and I want for 2 marks to know who wrote them. Gillis Powell, Pour Bitos.
Ennui.
Absolutely right. 2 marks. Now yours, Dennis. The book from which the film The Pumpkin Eater was made, who wrote that?
Penelope Mortimer wrote the book. Harold Pinter wrote the screenplay.
Penelope Mortimer, the book, 2 marks. Anne Scott James, The Reluctant Peer.
Oh, William Douglas Hume.
Yes, 2 marks it is. William Douglas Hume. And Frank Muir, The Royal Hunt of the Sun.
Peter Sheffer.
Peter Sheffer, who wrote Five Finger Exercise. 2 marks. The next round's about verse and poetry, and in this round, I give each member of each team a quotation and ask them for the following line or lines, and they get 2 marks if they can complete the quotation, and 2 more for saying where it comes from, author and so on. Beginning with Gillis Powell. The mayor was dumb and the council stood as if they were changed into blocks of wood.
The Pied Piper.
Yes. Author?
Browning.
Yes. Can you go on with the quotation?
Not a hope.
All right. 2 out of 4. The mayor was dumb and the council stood as if they were changed into blocks of wood, unable to move a step or cry to the children merrily skipping by, and could only follow with the eye that joyous crowd at the piper's back. It's when he leads all the children away into a cave and they're never seen again. Dennis Norden. Stormed at with shot and shell, boldly they rode and well.
Into the mouth of death, into the jaws of hell. Rode. 600.
Yes, you've got the mouth and the jaws a little confused, but that'll do.
Yeah,
well done.
Oh, this is my elocution voice, you know, going and on the words. The Light Brigade Charge Of by Tennyson Alfred Lord.
Yes, that's right. 4 military marks out of 4. Well done. And now, Anne Scott James. This, I think, is more difficult. In mathematics, he was greater than Tycho Brahe or Erapater, for he, by geometric scale, could take the size of pots of ale.
It sounds like one of those very violent hymns to me.
Yes, it's about the same time as that kind of hymn was written.
Early Victorian.
No, earlier than that. Long.
Oh. Mm. It's not the heroic couplet, is it?
No, it's shorter than that.
No, it's shorter than
it's
that,
it's an eight-syllable line, you see.
It's no good my trying to be bright, I just don't know.
It's the earlier Samuel Butler, who wrote a long mock-heroic poem called Hudibras, and it goes like this particular bit. In mathematics he was greater than Tycho Brahe or Erapater, for he by geometric scale could take the size of pots of ale, resolve by sines and tangents straight, if bread or butter wanted weight, and wisely tell what hour of the day the clock did strike by Algy Bray. And this is in a thing called Hudibrastics.
Thank you.
Now you'll know. Frank Miller. We have short time to stay, as you. We have as short a spring, as quick a growth to meet decay, as you or anything.
There's some children in the audience now. Mouth, they've just done this. Infuriating. Ah, yes. My esteemed partner on my left here says Herrick.
Yes, she says it quite rightly.
Oh, he was full of woe. Yes, he's full of the fleeting. It's short spring. You've got a short spring, and so have we. He's talking about a flower.
We've got flat tower as well.
Gather ye rosebuds.
It's that sort of thing, but it's the wrong flower.
Fair daffodil.
The rosebud's gone all.
We weep to see you haste away so soon.
That's it.
As yet the early rising sun has not achieved his noon, but I can't do the bit after it.
Well, that's the only bit we want here. They're good at repeating what Sir said.
Well, on what you've got between you so far, I'll give you 2.5. We have short time to stay as you. We have as short a spring, as quick a growth to meet decay, as you or anything. We die, as your eyes do, and dry away, like to the summer's rain, or as the pearls of morning's dew, ne'er to be found again. You've got almost all the poem, Dillis, except those particular lines. You did pretty well. 2.5. In the next round, for 2 marks, I want to know who said the following words at a time when they were just about to die. Starting with Dillis Powell, Show my head to the people. It is worth it.
Somebody about to be beheaded, as a guess.
Yes. Show my head, yes. Robespierre or something like that. One of the French.
Yeah, very near. Very
Danton.
Near absolutely right. It's Danton in the French Revolution, just before he's guillotined. 2 marks. Dennis Norton, my bedfellows are cramp and cough, we three all in a bed.
Don't know. Next.
Sorry, all in no. one bed. It should be my no. bedfellows are cramp and cough, we three all in one bed.
No.
Sententious fellow.
Pretentious fellow.
Sententious.
Sententious fellow.
Charles Lamb it is. Yes. Sorry, no marks. Anne Scott James, put that bloody cigarette out.
Somebody who died gallantly.
Yes, shot by a sniper.
Chronicles
of Clovis.
Who died?
Chronicles of Clovis.
Saki?
Yes. I think I helped too much. I'll give you half a mark. It was H.H. Munro who wrote under the pseudonym Saki, and he was telling a trench mate what to do with his cigarette at the moment when he's, almost the moment when he's shot by a sniper. Frank Muir, hello, my darling.
Sir Francis Drake.
No.
Hello, my darling.
Somebody who died in his bed.
Yes.
Somebody died in his bed.
He said it. He.
Yes.
And he said it to a female.
At least one.
Yes.
Well, that's narrowed the field down a bit, hasn't it? You want a chap who died in bed talking to a lady.
He was a writer.
Yes?
He was a writer.
He was a writer.
Come on, we're getting to it.
Chap he was a writer. Died in bed.
Died in bed, said it to a woman.
He was converted at a fairly late stage.
To Roman Catholicism.
Yes?
To Roman Catholicism.
Belloc.
No, not Belloc.
Francis Thompson.
You're so near.
Oh, really? It's not Belloc, Francis
Thompson. Catholic writers,
Thompson.
Come on.
Catholic writers.
Remote and ineffectual Don.
Oh!
Chesterton! Gilbert Keith! Himself!
Oh, well, 1 mark, I think, out of 2 would be pretty generous. It's alleged to be the last remark made by G.K. Chesterton when his wife and his secretary, which is a nice touch, came into his bedroom at the same time. This is what he said. Hello, my darling. 1 out of 2. And in this round, I want to know who were the following characters in what work by which author? 2 marks if you get it right. Chris Powell, Charmian.
Charmian?
Mm.
In Antony and Cleopatra?
Yes, and who was she?
She was one of Cleopatra's handmaids.
Quite right. Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra, Cleopatra's attendant, Charmian, who dies with her mistress. I also think one of the most sort of moving half or quarter lines in Shakespeare is what she says when she dies, which is, "Ah, soldier." She's a sweet one. Dennis Norton, Mark Tapley.
Dickens.
Yes.
Martin Chuzzlewit.
Yes, quite right. Charles Dickens is Martin Chuzzlewit, and Mark Tapley is the staunch friend of Martin Chuzzlewit himself. 2 marks. Anne Scott James, Jude Fawley.
The only Jude I can think of is Jude the Obscure.
You're quite right.
By Thomas Hardy.
He's the principal character in the novel Jude the Obscure by Thomas Hardy. 2 marks. And Frank Muir, Leopold Bloom.
Oh, he was 50% of the heroes of James Joyce's Ulysses.
Yes, that's near enough, I think. Very long book, but he's the leading character, Leopold Bloom, James Joyce's Ulysses. 2 marks. And now we come to the last round and go back to those quotations I gave the 2 teams earlier on in the programme. For 2 marks, Dillis Powell, can you give me the origin of your quotation? I do like to be beside the seaside.
It's a popular song.
Yes. Do you remember who wrote it?
I wasn't there, no.
No, I'm sure not.
For my time.
Yes, I suspect so.
I think it was, really. It was sung by Vesta Tilly.
Let's have the next line.
Oh, would you?
I do like to be beside the sea.
Yes. Oh, would you like to be beside the pom pom pom? When the earth bends, please, children.
It was written by somebody surprisingly called John A. Glover Kind.
Oh, jest.
In 1909. One out of two, I think. And now, Anne Scott-James, the origin of your quotation, Hail to the Blithe Spirit.
Well, this is the first line, I think, of Shelley's Ode to a Skylark.
Quite right. Opening line of Shelley's Ode to the Skylark, Hail to the Blithe Spirit, Bird thou never wert, overheard in the wings by no card. 2 marks. Mm-hmm. And now I asked Frank and Dennis to tell me their explanation of how these quotations came into being, and on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation draws the longer amount of applause from the audience here in the theatre. So back now to Frank Muir with his quotation, I do like to be beside the seaside.
On Thursday, this insurance chap came round to sell me some life insurance. And he spoke very highly of it. He pointed out how in about 15 or 20 years' time, my wife and children would be lolling about on the beach at Cannes, enjoying the sun, all due to accrued benefits and things. You know, he went on for about an hour and a half telling me about this. It was really rather skillful, looking back. For not once during that hour and a half did he point out that I would be dead at the time. We talked about it, and I showed me the figures, and I said, I'm not going to leave my family that amount of money to go swanning on the Mediterranean on, and he said, that's the annual premium, and the whole thing got a bit... And he started filling in the form, and he said, what is your occupation? He asked about my father's occupation, all that useless information. Then what is my occupation? And suddenly, I smelt danger. But they're very funny, these insurance people, you know. There are some trades and occupations they have a down on, of which mine is one. You see, people who have anything to do with insurance, and particularly car insurance, don't like ice cream salesmen, and they don't like log dealers, and they don't like people in the theatrical business. Anyway, I realised I didn't dare put my occupation as script writer, so I put manufacturer of wit substitute. You see, the reason why I did this, because I remembered an occasion some 20 years back when I told the truth on one of these insurance forms, a car insurance form, and had lost my job. It was just after the war, about 1946, I think it was, and I was earning a rather precarious living as a busker at Bognor. Bognor Regis, the heart of the Sussex Riviera, by the sea. And I was sort of acting to cues and giving them recitations to cinema cues. But it was very lucky because Hamlet was just on release then. Sir Laurence Olivier's production of Hamlet. So I gave them To Be or Not to Be, the soliloquy. And I went like a bomb. See, all these holidaymakers there, all in their sandals and print dresses and headscarves, were all congratulating themselves anyway on queuing up for Hamlet. And when I came there and gave them the full lot, you know, with expression, in my best voice, to be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis better to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or take up arms against a sea of trouble, and by opposing end them, to slink, you know, and so on. You know, and I got about 5 bob a time from these cues. Then I worked out that the film Hamlet was on in Bognor Regis, also Littlehampton, and also Hastings, and also Brighton. And in fact, you know, all these started about half an hour in between. If I could hire a car, I could whip along and do me to be or not to be, and absolutely clean up. You see, so I went along to this hire car chap, and he said, what sort of car do you like? Like, any special car you like? And I said, no, anything, because... So he said, right, occupation. So I said, well, it's rather difficult to explain. So he said, what do you do? And then I made the tragic mistake of my life. You see, I told him what I did, He wouldn't let me have the car. I couldn't get to these other cinemas. I couldn't work as a monologuist in queues. And in desperation of getting a decent job, I became a scriptwriter. And now I'm worth more dead than alive. Because when he said, what do you do? What do you do? What's your occupation like? What do you do like? I said, quite honestly, well, I do like to be beside the seaside.
And now, Dennis Norden, and you'll remember his quotation was, "Hail to thee, blithe spirit."
See, it wasn't very long ago, a few months ago, I went to this party where I met this chap who was a big bikini manufacturer. I mean, I don't mean he manufactured big bikinis. I mean, he was big in the manufacture of bikinis. And I said to him, you know, as people do, how is business? You know, expecting some kind of jaunty answer like, you know, it's going swimmingly or shares are buoyant, you know. A kind of fun remark that these rich people make. But he looked very, very gloomy. And he said, it's awful. He said, all they want, the women, are these topless bikinis. That's all they want. And I said, well, if that's all they want, that's all you must make for them, isn't it? You know, it's sort of topless oblige, you know. And he said, it went about as well with him as it did with you. He looked terribly sour. And he said, yes, he said, but... He said, all they want is the tops. He said, what do I do with the tops? He said, I've got a warehouse full of bikini tops. 2,000 bikini tops in this warehouse. I don't know what to do with them. Well, that was a challenge. To a chap like me, with a good business head and full of imagination, I made a deal there and then. In return for my life savings, £27.16. I gave him this £27 odd and got in return 2,000 bikini tops because I knew exactly what to do with them. As he said it, it came into my mind. Take off the sort of harness part of it, divide it into two elements, and there you have 4,000 gaily coloured skull caps. I reckon there must be thousands of men this coming winter in the cold will be men with bald spots on top of their heads. So I had them delivered and I took off all the appendages on them, cut them up and looked at them, and there they were on the floor. And suddenly I had this sickening thought. These weren't ordinary topless bikinis. They were boned bikinis. Now, no man with red blood in his veins is going to walk around with a boned skull cap on his head. And for a moment, I panicked. I was stuck with this. I could see them. They were all on the floor in a line. 4,000. It was like a settlement of teeny-weeny igloos. What else could I use them for? I looked at them and I racked my brains. Nothing came. On an impulse, I got up and I turned them all over. Turned them all upside down so that the open side was uppermost. It looked like a field of many splendid half grapefruits. Grapefruits. Serve your grapefruit in a gay cluck. No. I thought maybe if I put handles on them, would anybody conceivably ever want to use a cloth cocoa cup? No. I sat there and sat there right the way through the night, and finally the rosy fingers of dawn peeped through the curtain and I heard from far off this shrill twittering sound. I thought it was me. I thought, this is the sound that panic makes, you know, my stomach. And I realized, no, it wasn't. It was a skylark. Somewhere far off, skylark, have you anything to say to me? And then it came into my head, full-blown, the whole idea. What owner of a budgerigar or a canary could resist an advertisement which said, why not give Budgie his own little personalised bird's nest? Padded
reinforced and available in many colours. Well, I don't have to tell you, I don't think there's a bird lover listening to this programme who hasn't got one hanging up in Budge's cage at this moment. I got out of trouble. And it is strange, is it not, that this line, "Hail to thee, blithe spirit," and my idea for marketing bikini tops have this in common. They were both ode to a skylark.
And by your vote, he wins the contest, Dennis does, of the two stories, and that leads to a final score in which, nevertheless, Dillis Powell and Frank Muir win by one mark from Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden. And this also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The programme was devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.